Today on a special Rambling About Cars, we've got a really cool Porsche 911 that you won't see on the streets. You probably won't see it on the track because there's only 77 of them coming, but you will see the Honda Prologue. We're going to talk about that SUV. We're going to talk about the new Lightning trim, the Lightning Flash.
Which is a good name.
It is a pretty cool name. And then we're also going to talk about 500 digital cars that are driven by ones and zeros. As part of Forza Motorsport. So let's roll. It's podcast time. I am Christopher Smith. Across the way, Mr. Chris Bruce, and we are not alone.
I'm here, and I'm ready to kill it.
Great. Yeah. Motor1.com editor-in-chief Seth Miersma is our guest tonight because he is going to be telling us about a trip that he went on to the Porsche Rennsport Reunion 7? 7, right?
Seven, yes.
Rennsport Reunion 7.
RR7. Don't forget the hashtag.
Very cool Porsches that were there, amongst other things. But while we're waiting for people to come on, let's just do a little general car talk. Seth, we haven't had you on in a while. Have you been doing any fun car stuff recently, whether it's your own personal cars, whether it's – have you had a test car that's just got you real fired up about something? Have you done any wrenching? Have you played any games? What's going on?
Let's see. I think all of the above. I've been really obsessed with a new app game, but it has nothing to do with cars, so I won't belabor it. But it's a it is a general management game for a sim NBA sort of franchise. So it's just really drafting players and things like that.
You had to be nervous when he said general management app. It's like, oh my god, Seth, you're not doing like sim business management. No,
he was thinking the same thing.
No, then he said NBA. Okay, that makes sense.
No, I I've been playing a little bit of Baldur's Gate 3 because I finally got a PS5, as I think I told you guys a couple of weeks ago. So I've been playing that and enjoying it with my friends. I anticipate probably getting Gran Turismo at some point, like sooner or later. So that'd be cool. In terms of cars, though, I do have, and actually it's great that you asked because I'm not sure that we're going to be around to do our normal test car happy hour podcast tomorrow. I've got BMW's XM in the driveway right now. So that's the, that's the BMW hybrid, like performance hybrid SUV. I don't have the specs up in front of me, but it's something like 670 horsepower, like combined system power. Kind of weird to drive, and I don't need to go into it in detail, but we did have a really fun night. I came back from Rennsport Reunion, and it was a Friday evening, I guess. And I drove back from the airport, my first time in the car, and was just in one of those moods to just like crank some music and realize that the sound system in the XM is like literally one of the very best I've ever heard in my entire life. So I dragged my wife out. We had a couple glasses of wine. I dragged her out to the car for her to listen to it, which usually is just like, anytime I'm like, hey, you have to look at this. It's, you know, it's a little bit of a painful exercise. And she loved it. We ended up just like hanging out in the car for like 20 minutes, like playing different songs that like represent the audio really well, putting the seats back and just like kind of chilling out. Like we were having sort of a concert date, and it was awesome.
I have visions of children with their noses pressed against the windows while mom and dad are out in the XM just rocking out.
The kids were safely asleep when we did this, and I did do a couple due diligence runs. I ran inside to make sure that they weren't making any noise, so like nobody was endangered. Please don't call CPS on me. No, the kids were fine, but it's a really interesting vehicle. Again, like I have some issues with some of the driving characteristics. The handoff between electric and the gas power is clunky sometimes. It's really stiffly sprung. So there's some, I don't know who's paying $160,000 necessarily for that, but zoom out a little. It's a super impressive vehicle. The like crazy design, a really amazing interior and a great sound system. So that's been fun. Yes.
Awesome. Before we move into Rennsport Reunion, Grupa FBC says apparently it's Bathurst 1000 this weekend in Australia. So he will be on the sofa. And that sounds like a good way to spend a weekend because that's always a pretty cool race.
Yeah, I'm a little jealous on that. I have not had a chance to visit Australia. It's one of my bucket list things. I'm a big fan of the cars down there, big fan of the people. I worked with a guy from Australia for a little while in my previous life. I mean, just bucket list thing. I want to get down there, Bathurst is a race that I am just dying to see. Mm-hmm. So yeah, lots of good stuff there. And hey, welcome all the Ramblers. Eric Nefron, GFR evening, everyone. We got everybody here. We got Ted Adam Green in the house.
No, we don't have Ted Adam Green. Ted Adam can't be with us this week. He said he's sorry.
Oh, I see. I see. But he was kind enough to drop the comment.
He did, yeah.
In here,
comment before the
saying
show,
he can't join us this week. Hey, wherever you're at, wherever you are, you get us on Motor One.com Facebook, Motor One.com Twitter, Motor One on YouTube for the live show that goes every Wednesday. You can jump into the comments, type in your comments, say, Smith, what is that weird car behind you? That's a Porsche 911, Dub, because we're going to be talking about Porsche 911. Yeah. Throw in your comments. Like it all comes in right here where we're at. We can see your comments. We can comment and respond to you live. And if you still catch us on audio, we love you on the audio platform, Spotify, Google, Amazon. I'm going to say it.
I'm already shaking my head.
Deezer. We're on Deezer. We're on so many different platforms. You catch us there every Friday, and you can always, always, always email us where? Podcast@motorone.com. We always love the emails.
Yeah.
I don't have anything car related to talk about other than what we have going on. I drove around a little bit in a bunch of rain over the weekend.
I want to hear about the car video game that we have to talk about later tonight. So I think we should get this show moving. But before we talk about the virtual cars, let's talk about a very real car. And Smith, as you were saying, a very rare, very expensive real car. And Seth, you got to see this thing. This is, deep breath, everyone, the Porsche 911 GT3R Rennsport edition. And throwing some photos up here now. And yeah, this guy, it's going to be limited to 77 units, and they cost $1,046,000 each
to start.
Exactly. Thank you for pointing that out.
To start,
and we know how Porsche loves to add, you know, various packages and things. And I found that really interesting on this, because we're talking about a track car. This is not street legal. It's obviously built from the GT3R, the race car, but you can't even race this in GT3 because the engine, it was like Porsche said, you know what? We're just going to make this car. It's just going to be kind of a love letter. So we're not going to stick to whatever regulations we need to race in the category. We're just going to make this a 611 horsepower, 9,400 RPM monster of a machine, naturally aspirated. I love on the back of this car, and they mentioned this in the press release. It's like, yeah, usually where you might see vents and things in the back, we just left it open because we just wanted to save weight. So it's like you have the bumper, sort of, and then you have a diffuser, sort of, and then you're just looking into the exhaust system, just in the back of the car. Go ahead.
GT3R race car makes 565 horsepower.
So yes.
At 611, that's what, over 50?
It's a healthy
horsepower more. Yeah.
It's a healthy bump. I'm dying to hear this thing full throttle. And what I was about to say there about the exhaust system, you can fit it with mufflers and catalysts if you're on a track that has noise requirements. I thought that was a hilarious feature that Porsche pointed out. Hey, it's a track only car. It's not legal for the street, but it may not be legal for some tracks either, right? If there are noise
tracks, though, they have noise. Like, yep. Because they're so, like, I know Monza, that's always a thing.
Yep.
Because it's kind of in a park, so you have to have mufflers and stuff, because otherwise you're going to bother people. So that's,
yeah,
so in Europe, that's a thing.
Very, very thoughtful of Porsche to do that. Obviously, the big wing on the back draws your attention. They actually had to put extra supports on that because it produces so much downforce. I didn't get the specifics as far as all the downforce that's involved, but really, Porsche says the only thing similar to the GT3R is the roof and the hood. Mm-hmm. Everything else is specific here to the Rennsport. Except when you get under the skin, the suspension, all of that, that's still pretty much GT3R race car. They do offer some specific suspension tunings for Ren Sports. And there's no outside mirrors. They got rid of those. They just have little, cameras with screens inside the cockpit. Yeah, just it's an awesome car. I mean, it's $1 million, and it's just a track toy.
It's a
machine.
Interesting thing when you think about it philosophically, though, because this is not a street car, but it's also not a race car. You can't, buy one of these and throw a livery on it and take it racing somewhere. This is just like a flex of showing up to the track and like, I've got the ultimate 911 because the only place I can take it is the track. That's it.
Yeah, Bruce, I think that you're right. And I haven't made up my mind about this car yet. There was a lot of it's really actually interesting. It's fascinating for me to hear you guys write about it. Smith, you wrote the post to this. Obviously, we had all the materials under embargo, so you had all the technical information, the photos. You knew what it looked like before I. Oh, actually, that's not true because they didn't give us photos, right?
They didn't give us any photos. You gave us the photos first
to start. That's very rare, but we've all now you've seen all the information and I think it's really cool. And you've got to remember too that some of the important context for this is a 75th anniversary kind of birthday present from Porsche to itself, right? And to its fans and to its owners. So in that regard, I think it's a really cool object, right? It's an amazing machine. I wish I had a recording that we could easily share here, but the question of what it sounds like, if there aren't videos out there yet, we should find some and put those up on social or on post on Motor One, because it sounds like a jet engine like flying by at low altitude. It really doesn't sound like any other vehicle that I've ever heard, even other race cars like at full throttle. Jörg Burgmeister, who's a Porsche development driver and endurance racer, was piloting this thing for, I think, 3 flying laps around Laguna Seca. When we were there, we were right there on the pit row as he came by. And you could hear it from like the crest of the corkscrew all the way down, basically as he's ramping up, and it's just ear splitting, as it comes in. So the sound is incredible. The engineering is obviously super cool. I was just looking up because of the wing. We don't have the spec and we need to find it, but the standard GT3 RS is the aero package on that creates almost 1900 pounds of downforce, right? Mm-hmm. So this is more. We know
this is more. More,
but we don't know. I was joking that like it could drive upside down twice or something stupid, right? Because because it's got so much downforce and so much stick. So I'm positive that's phenomenal to drive and absolutely kind of bonkers to look at. And like I said, almost a pure engineering exercise. But Bruce, you raised the great counterpoint. Who cares? I mean, the counterpoint is you can't have it on the road for sure. You can't, there's no series really that it can race in. Some of the guys that I was with were making the point that probably, outfits like Porsche Car Club of America will make a way for a car like this to compete. Like you could, obviously you can take it to a track and have a lot of fun with it, but like there's no home for this in the racing landscape either, from grassroots on up. And it's a tiny bit cynical if you want to look at it that way in the landscape of how people collect Porsche these days, right? So very limited edition car on the 75th anniversary. Is this just going to be a car that the Jerry Seinfelds of the world buy and drive, once or twice every decade, and otherwise it sits around and accrues value, right? Until it sits on a concourse somewhere. I hope that's not the case. I hope that some of these examples lead very lively lives and we see them out there a lot on famous tracks, and that Porsche works to get them in the hands of people who are going to, one, be capable of driving it, and two, drive it in interesting places for their own enjoyment, but also so that, the public can see it a little bit more and the message gets out there a bit. I think if that happens, the car becomes really cool. If it doesn't, if they get socked away in warehouses and collections and museums, then the car starts to become not at all cool, right? So it's an interesting kind of a coin flip of a legacy for me.
Well, Seth, I'm glad that you talked about that aspect, because Porsche in their press release really, in a lot of ways, alluded to that side of the coin of appealing to collectors, of this being an item almost like a piece of art to appreciate as opposed to being this fantastic car to drive. They actually talked to some length about that, saying, hey, we're offering this in 7 different color options. There are 3 different exterior designs. They're really making it something that's, I mean, there are only 77. So it's already going to be a very, very limited vehicle. And they're presenting it in such a way where you can customize it down to just about whatever you want there. You can make something of, you know, one of these 77 that's essentially uniquely yours. Mm-hmm. And I really see this, for better or for worse, being more of a collector's item where it'll go in somebody's collection. Maybe they take it out for a couple parade events, things of that nature. I would be shocked if the majority of these are driven even semi-regularly. But I mean, as you said right in the beginning too, this is basically a birthday present to Porsche and its owner, or you know, its vehicle owners. I guess it doesn't really bother me that it might not be more than just a piece of art. I don't know. Now I feel like I'm starting to get way too philosophical on this. No, it's a freaking awesome car.
It's awesome, and things can be really cool, but also really dumb. And this belongs in that Venn diagram where buying a car that you can only drive, that you can't race, you know, or you can't drive on the road, like it's purely a track car. It's a wild concept, you know, for most normal people, for at least the three of us. Like, I can't imagine doing that. But there are people out there that can, so I guess that this is what this is for, and we still get to admire it. That's the nice thing, is that we can sit here and look at images and, you know, maybe we'll get to see one on a track someday during a track day or whatever, and we can at least admire it that way.
Yeah, and I mean, like, you know, Grupa FBC just made the point, and I think he's correct. It, you know, he's comparing it to the 935 Tribute from a couple of years ago. There are elements in this car and a lot of the things that Porsche does that are self-referential, that like refer back to their own history, cars that matter to them, and people who are absolutely dyed-in-the-wool fanatics, collectors, especially 911 collectors, Porsche racing car collectors, will see this in a totally different light. So I don't mean to, like, I'm absolutely not bagging on the car or like the effort. I think it's super cool. I think there is a laser focused niche for the people who could own this, appreciate all of that, and get some enjoyment out of the car, right? You have to be a really special person to be able to do all of those things. And I'm just a little, I'm not even afraid it's going to happen, but like, it's always to me a little disappointing when a very wealthy person acquires something like this that should be kind of a meaningful part of the history of a brand that I care about, just as an asset and not because they care about it as a vehicle. Right. So that's my fear a little bit. And it's unfounded. We don't know anything about who's going to buy them. We haven't heard any of that. So like, there's a good chance that they've even taken that into consideration, and maybe that won't happen. Right. Maybe this will end up in meaningful collections with people who really care. I think that would be fantastic. But
we needed you on the podcast when we had the story of the guy in Australia that bought the McLaren. I forget which one he bought, but it's like he bought the car and then had it lifted by a crane to his penthouse on like the 80th floor of this place, where it's like, you can't even take it for a drive, even if you wanted to, because it's like they literally took down a wall, put it inside, and then built the skyscraper around it. It's just there, you know? Yeah. I think in this instance, Porsche, I mean, you said it, Seth, there's a laser focused niche here for this car. And I think I'm okay with that because Porsche is basically coming out and saying there's a laser focused niche for this car. We're not building the cool special edition 911 GT3R Rennsport that all of our enthusiasts are going to love. And we can't wait for our enthusiasts to get there, you know, billing it like, hey, this is something for everybody to go out and enjoy. No, it's not. It's laser focused, and that's its job. There's nothing else going on with it. Take it as it is.
Well, the other point, and again, like I'm stealing a little bit from the conversation that we had, because there are a ton of people at Rennsport, and then there are a lot of journalists at Rennsport. So there are a lot of sort of colleagues of mine who are around having a conversation. And the other point that they were making is, was this a missed opportunity by Porsche, considering where we are, like again, at on the anniversary, but also on the cusp of like the full changeover to electrification? Did Porsche miss the chance to do something that was special and forward-looking as opposed to special and kind of backwards-looking? Because I would argue for as technologically advanced as this is, and it really is, I think, you know, like close to the bleeding edge of technology, automotive technology right now, at least for the racetrack in 2023, it definitely is looking backwards more than it's looking forwards as we can conceive of the future. So it also would have been cool. And now I'm putting a ton on the brand to be like, all right, we'll put on this giant event once every 4 years, invite 80,000 people, and give me two cars that are both special that I've never seen before. Right. Like, I understand it's a big ask, but you know what I mean? Like, I wonder if that was in the conversation ever to say, like, we have these resources and this opportunity at this moment in time to do something. Should it be something that's looking toward the future and not towards our storied past?
I go with story past in this case.
I kind of agree. I see where both of you are coming from, but
you're getting way too deep. I mean, it's 8 o'clock on a Wednesday, man. You're getting way too deep. This is like Saturday afternoon at the coffee shop talk.
I haven't got to talk to anybody about this car yet. You guys are the first real people that I've talked to about the car.
Oh my gosh.
So you
poor guy.
Thoughts. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. Move us along.
Yeah. Before you move us along, Bruce.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Because I mean, we're slated to talk to you about Rennsport. We've got Honda Prologue. We've got Ford F-150 Lightning Flash. We've got Forza to come. Yeah. But let's talk a little bit more about Rennsport, Seth, because you were there. I mean, I think this is a really good tie-in here, obviously with the 911 GT3R Rennsport, because it debuted there. For those that may not be familiar with Rennsport and what it's about, I mean, just give us kind of a quick overview, and then just tell us how cool it was to be around all of that Porsche motorsport racing legacy.
It was incredible. So I've never been to a Rennsport before. As you guys pointed out, this is Rennsport 7. They happen every few years. There was a little bit of a hiccup in the cadence of these because of COVID. So, you know, it's roughly every 4 or 5 years that they do this. For anybody, really, I don't think anybody, any one of us here is like the biggest Porsche enthusiast in the entire world. I think we all respect the brand. But I can guarantee it that you guys walking through this like I did would just be blown away by the cars that you've seen on TV, in races, in magazines and books throughout your lives that are there in the metal for the first time. And that's true of a lot of these like great classic events. But there is something really special. There's a bit of a halo effect when you've got all things of one brand and all Porsche, arguably one of the most important, if not the most important, sports car brand that we've ever had. Right. So the vibe was great. There was much more interest, and I wasn't there for, I mean, there was sort of the early stages of the racing. There were no final races happening. I was there. Well, I guess there were Friday. There were on Saturday, but especially on Friday, the first day that we were there, I was kind of shocked and then a little bit impressed by the fact that the crowds were huge. People were watching the racing that was going on, but mostly people were doing what I do a lot when I'm at events like this, which is wander through the paddock, taking photos of cars, talking to owners about cars. It was like a super cool car show with like the best, you know, the best and the brightest from Porsche around the world and certainly in North America. So the vibe was cool, right? Like people were excited to be there, and it was, you know, far bigger. I don't have the stats on this, but PR folks were telling us 80,000 people. Somebody mentioned 86,000 people or 86,000 tickets sold, which is tens of thousands more than attend something like the Rolex reunion during Car Week in at the same track at Laguna Seca. So just a huge outpouring of people that are fans. So many people drove from everywhere in the country, drove their 911 or drove their Boxster, or, you know, when we on Saturday when we drove in, all of the 914 guys had lined up their cars along the first part of the parking entrance next to the fence. So they're like 27 914s just sitting against the barrier. It's you just stuff that you never see anywhere else. So that was really, really impressive. And overall, I just thought like it was all positive vibes. Like nobody was being weird. Like there was no, even though there are crowds, everything was well managed. I just thought it was a really great car event to go to. And I can't recommend it highly enough to anybody who even if you go for a day of the weekend, one time, the next time they put it on, if you care about cars at all, I think you'd really, really enjoy that day. So.
And while you were there, you got to talk to someone pretty cool, Alexander Fabig. I'm not sure how you pronounce his last name, but he is Porsche's vice president of individualization and classic. And you got to talk to him about Porsche's kind of famous Sonderwunsch program, which is essentially the world is your oyster. Assuming you can write the check big enough and you're patient enough for the car to come, you can kind of do whatever you want to a Porsche that exists. And he brought up one example, not that we think that this is going to happen, but theoretically someone could ask for a Panamera convertible. And again, your pockets are deep enough that conceivably is something someone could have.
Yeah. I mean, this was such a fun conversation. Alexander was a great guy. I mean, he's a pretty high level executive at Porsche AG in Germany. And he was just like, you know, we were just hanging out, right? Like talking about cars. I knew a lot about, or I thought I knew a lot about the overall Porsche personalization program and how many, you know, thousands of options that you're able to have, honestly, straight out of the configurator and then into stuff that they can do on the line at the factory. I understood, like I'd heard Sonderwunsch before, like I'd heard the term, and I guess I had kind of a vague idea that it was a grander customization program, but I didn't really understand what they were capable of. So the thing that blew my mind was if you get to a point where you want to do the Panamera convertible, that's why he took an extreme example because it starts to make sense there. So you're beyond sort of paint and trim and you know, upholstery customization, where they would need to build something bespoke, right? They're building something one-off. You are most likely going to fly to Weissach, right? You're going to meet with your team. You get a team at Porsche. And in fact, he kept trying to emphasize, and I know there's a little bit of marketing here, but he kept trying to emphasize, like, when you're doing this program, you are essentially working at Porsche because you have a design team, an engineering team, and then this sort of like customer concierge team to bring everything together for you. So, you know, some people I think show up with a really clear idea, a lot of inspirations and know exactly what they want. And they have sort of one meeting and then maybe regular check-ins. But Alexander was saying there are people who are, I can't remember if he said they're in Germany or if they're just in Europe, but there's a guy who's in the program who shows up once a month, right? To do sort of, to have status updates, to talk about like where they're at with the project, to iterate on the ideas that they have and things like that. So it's just, you know, it just reminds me of the old school world of coach building, right? Where if you had the money and you knew the right people, you could go and make your dream come true by using very talented artisans and engineers to create, to bring your vision to life. And that's happening at Porsche right now. And it's obviously been happening for a while, but they're making a lot of, the reason that we're talking about it is because they're making a push to kind of get the message out there. So,
Well, I thought it was fascinating that his goal is apparently they make eight Sonderwunsch cars a year. His goal, we're going to get it up to 10. Which is just, you know, when you are making 10 of these special cars a year, you understand that how special, you know, this type of project is.
And they're thought it was three a year.
Really? I might have misread your story then. Okay. I thought there was 8 a year.
There are 8 projects ongoing right now.
I misunderstood.
Ah,
They have the capacity to do three per year. And he's sort of, you know, he gets embarrassed talking about it. To me, it's like, dude, you don't need to be embarrassed. Like, it's cool that this even exists. I mean, they want to increase the ability to do it because I'm sure that they make a healthy margin on doing this as well. And as I say in the story, you know, he didn't give us an exact figure, but he said the ballpark is, because somebody asked the question, if you're going through the process and start the process and then decide that you're like, I don't want to do it, what happens? And he said, no, there is like sort of a standard fee, like a starting fee, and that's $100,000, right? So you're going to purchase the vehicle that's the base. You know, we're talking about $150,000, $200,000 for if it's a 911 that you want, plus $100,000 on top of that. And then you start adding up all the work and materials that you on top of that too. So,
and you mentioned there's an 8-year wait list, and that's right. Not 8 years to get your car. That's no. 8 years for them to start on the correct process of building your car.
Correct. Yeah. And another couple of years to actually build the car. So, exactly. Yeah, I mean, the joke that we're making is like, you know, there are a lot of people who have the money and love Porsche, but don't have the time to spare, right? Maybe they're a little too old to want to jump into the Sonderwunsch pool and start building their dream car. But I think it's really exciting. And I think that's great. Porsche Cayenne Cross Cabriolet would be amazing.
It would be pretty cool.
This was kind of my counterpoint all weekend was I would rather spend my $1 million on a Porsche doing this than buying the GT3 R Rennsport as cool as that is. Right.
So I've got one quick question to ask here, going to you, Seth, since you had this conversation, can you get painted on stripes?
Sure. That car was a Sonderwunsch car. It was. I was going to bring that up. But yes, you can. I'm sure you can get painted stripes.
I don't know, Seth, if you were in on that podcast where we had Brett on. This was actually back.
It was during Monterey Car Week. It was.
Oh, yeah. During Monterey, we did our cheap car challenge. And Bruce's Porsche had painted on stripes. And damn it.
I was proud of that. It was really, it was a cool, but it was a unique Porsche. It was truly unique. And yes, the stripes were painted on and I got made fun of mercilessly.
The Ramblers know all about it.
Made fun of me for that.
It was a cool car, but $1 million for painted on stripes.
Yeah.
Well, anyways.
So let's move to a much more affordable end. So do we want to talk about the Prologue next, the Honda Prologue, or do we want to do Forza next? Smith,
let's jump into Prologue.
Okay, gotcha.
Let's jump into Prologue. So this is the
these photos.
So I mean, this is the 2024 Honda Prologue. We already know some about it. We learned more about it here late last week.
Quite a bit more about it.
It's Honda's collaboration with General Motors using the Ultium platform. We got a bit more information, not full disclosure yet, not everything, but Honda released a lot of details. We know it's going to be available with single motor front wheel drive, dual motor all wheel drive, in its top form, all wheel drive. It's going to have 288 horsepower, 333 pound feet of torque. I want to come back to that in a second here. Let me just get some more stats out. We know that it's got the largest wheels that Honda will ever offer or has ever offered on a production vehicle. It's going to have 21 inches in top trim. It's got an 11-inch digital driver display, 11.3-inch infotainment screen. It's got an estimated range, a manufacturer estimated range at this point. I want to make that very clear, of 300 miles maximum. That's going to be for the front-wheel drive model. The estimate drops to 260 miles for all-wheel drive. Style-wise, I mean, we know, okay, it's nearly as wide as it is long, so it has sort of just that big kind of presence about it, but it's passport size. So, I mean, it's not a tremendously large vehicle by any stretch of the imagination.
I mean, passport's not a compact, but
it's not small.
A land,
but
you know, SUV.
Yeah. But I mean, I kind of like this. The more I look at this, and maybe I'm jumping ahead here a little bit because I didn't talk about all the stature yet, but it's been called kind of unassuming and maybe maybe a, just a little anonymous with its styling.
Yeah.
And the more I look at it, the more I just kind of love it.
Yeah, I'm not on board with you there, buddy. But okay.
Let me toss just some other quick stats out here. It can fast charge at 155 kilowatts. That'll get you 65 miles of range in 10 minutes. It's going to be priced. We don't have specific pricing, but it's going to start somewhere in the high $40,000 range. It's going to be available in early 2024. We don't have specifics on that yet as well. But guys,
85 kilowatt hour battery pack is.
Oh,
yep.
Yep. 85. Thank you, Seth. The 85 watt kilowatt battery pack. I did have it written down here on my notes. It was just kind of scrunched in there between the 300 mile estimated range and the 288 horsepower. I promise I'm doing my homework, guys.
No worries. No, you're fine, buddy.
But let me go back to that 288 horsepower and the styling, because I think we all three of us, when we first saw the images, it was kind of like, you know, where is this going? But the more the more I think about Honda and how Honda began and then evolved to the company it is, they weren't trying to be grandiose. They weren't trying to set the world ablaze. They were just trying to build a good, functional, reliable vehicle. Now, obviously, we have no idea on the reliability aspect of this yet. That will be determined once it goes on sale and it gets into the hands of buyers. But in terms of style, in terms of functionality, in terms of power, we've gotten so used to new EVs pumping out 400 or 500 horsepower without even thinking about it, because hey, it's an electric vehicle. All you got to do is just put a little more juice into the motors and boom, easy horsepower. But that your hit there will come in range, right? So here we have a functional, practical SUV, front wheel drive or available all wheel drive. Modest power, modest looks. The more I think about it, the more I think this is a Honda. That's what a Honda should be. Am I crazy on that?
Is it a Honda?
On the outside, they're sharing the platform underneath. It's the Ultium platform underneath. We know there's the collaboration there with Honda and General Motors.
Yes.
But Honda has also said that it's going to feel like a Honda, right? They're working to differentiate it from GM's products, which I think is the Blazer in this case.
I mean, first of all, of course they are. What else would they say? Second of all, it will, because so much of this is down to software tuning, right? And mm-hmm. a lot of stuff has nothing to do with the powertrain, right? The propulsion platform has nothing to do with the way that they designed the suspension, for instance, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that they can do a lot of things that will make it feel different, quote unquote, than whatever other products are riding on this platform. And there are a lot of them, right? Like GM, we saw the Acura ZDX, which is also on the same platform as well. I guess in terms of the styling, I think it looks pretty good. I don't think it looks anonymous at all. I think that if you saw that, part of it is that we're looking at it in this like bright blue, like borderline teal color that would stand out anyways, just because of the color. But I don't really have any issues with the styling. And in terms of the drive, I mean, we're still talking about, it's going to be a heavy SUV. It's got 333 pound feet of torque. Like it's going to feel sprightly. It will feel mm-hmm. It'll feel right on par with everything else in this kind of category that it borderline competes with. To me, it's, if you've got somebody who's got a lot of faith in Honda as a brand that delivers something that has a high level of engineering and quality, and it's starting at a $40,000 price point, which frankly is very affordable in the midsize EV SUV space right now.
Yeah.
I just think that this is a car that is going to be a winner for a lot of people who want to buy their first SUV and have either been waiting for a Honda SUV or have been waiting for something that doesn't feel like a spaceship or like they're going to, you know, stand out in a funny way too. So that's not damning by faint praise. I think there's a huge market for that. There are a lot of people who are just like, can I just have a car? I would like it to be an EV, but can I have a car and not something that's a, a fashion statement or a political statement when I'm driving it too. So I think that when and if they're able to build these at approaching the scale that they've been talking about, like all the other Altium stuff, they're going to do very well with it. That other thing is the big question in my mind, because you know, we saw some pretty bad production news for Altium platformed things today as well. So I think that the big question for me is, when am I actually going to see them en masse available to buy on dealer lots and things like that? So.
No, I'm there. I think I'm actually there with you. And maybe it's just because you and I are getting older. We don't necessarily want all the big flashy stuff anymore, right? No, it's, as I was thinking about this,
been thrown under the bus here.
You're still the young guy of the group. You've still got a mini
snapper over here.
You've got the mini in the garage, and you're, yeah, man, you got it all going on. No, I was just thinking about this more today, because, you know, I'm thinking back. Okay, you know, the original Honda Civic. Look how it's just kind of revered. And I knew a guy in high school that drove one of those early first gen Civics. And I mean, we kind of made fun of it at that point. And then it's like, but it did everything that you needed it to do, and it didn't complain. And we could fit like four people and a drum set in it. And, you know, because that's in high school, that's what you do. You fit your friends and the drum set in the back because somebody's playing music somewhere, right? And it I guess I just sort of made the connection in my head. Okay. This is a Honda. This is a Honda. And I'm liking it more and more and more. Bruce, we've been talking. What's your take here? Do you still think it's
a little bit? So the fact that it is using another automaker's underpinnings and sharing so much stuff with another automaker, it just always, it always makes you wonder how much you can differentiate it to make it your own as a company. And so that, it still gives me pause. I will say what I did not realize, and I paused it here. I have been looking at these images, I kid you not, all day. And this moment is the first time I realized the white thing in the back is the Moto Compacto, the new Honda Moto Compo Electric. And I was pulling up photos as you were starting to talk to me because I wanted to show the people what that looks like. And it's adorable little thing. And yeah, so I don't know about the vehicle itself. Well, I'm happy to wait and see. I'm not, you know, I'm not saying there's something wrong with it. I gotta wait and see. But I will say, I'm gonna stop sharing this here, and I'm gonna start sharing this here. I would take a Moto Compacto all day, every day. And here she is. That's adorable. I want that more than I want the Prologue.
I know where you were going with it. And every time I see it, I just think it's like one of the cassette transformers from Soundwave from the 80s.
Bingo.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Right. Same. It's like, let's paint it black. We'll put a little, you know, animal head on the front, and we'll just call it Ravage.
It's rad.
But yeah,
I'm riding so that is
my, it's cool. I mean, I think it's neat. It's cool.
Yeah.
So I am withholding judgment until I actually see them on the road and get a chance to drive one, stuff like that. But right now I'm not sure yet, but I really like the Moto Compacto.
I'm stoked. I'm doing, Honda is bringing a few of those out to M1 Concourse in Detroit or north of Detroit next week. So, if they'll let me do it, if I don't surpass the weight limit, I'm going to get on one of those and ride it around and write a story about it. So more to come on that front. But
I totally want to see that. It not the weight limit, the height limit. Because for those that don't know, Seth is you're a tall man.
Yeah, it's going to be awkward as hell. I'm going to look ridiculous on it, and I'm okay with that. That's completely fine.
I hope you are okay with it, cuz that's what it's all about.
I would
look probably even worse on it, because it's just, okay, here's this little round blob whose legs don't reach the ground, right?
I have a feeling your legs would touch on the Moto Compo Compacto.
Okay, yeah. I'll give you that.
So yeah, so I'm withholding judgment. I think it's cool. I'm glad it's here. I will say, so far, I think in terms of vehicle names, this is my favorite of the year. The Ford F1 Lightning Flash.
F-150.
That's a great name.
F1 was a truck from the late 40s.
Yes, Ford F-150 Lightning Flash. I'm speaking of the Lightning Flash part. That is the F-150 name.
Bravo. F-150 Lightning Flash. You know, it's a neat name, and I mean to let everybody know. Okay, F-150 Lightning Flash. It's a new trim level that's going to slot basically between the XLT and the Lariat. You're getting a few more features that you wouldn't get on the XLT. You're not getting quite the same stuff you would get on the Lariat. And as a result, you're getting a little more for obviously a little more cash. Ford says it's $69,995, but that includes the $7,500 tax rebate. If you don't include that, it's $77,495, but that's the way it's presented here. You do get the extended range battery, 320 mile range. You get Blue Cruise 1.2.
Right.
You get the larger 15.5 inch screen versus the 12 inch screen. That's the crux of the Flash. And I love the name Flash, but I would have wanted it on something more flashy.
Still, you know, this is still an interesting vehicle. It's still an interesting pickup truck to me that, you know.
Oh, it's interesting.
You know, you've got the Rivian, you know, we know the Cybertruck is incoming, you know, it's coming. For real this time, it's coming. Because, you know, if you look at our pals on Inside EVs, it's actually really close now. But, you know, the Lightning is kind of one of the major electric trucks out there right now. And this just seems like a really good fit into the lineup. I agree. You kind of want the Lightning Flash to be flashier, maybe. But still, I think this is a really nice set of features for the truck.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting rollout because I agree. Like it's a little funny as you kind of like look through all the other trim levels. The trim levels of Lightning just like mirror trim levels current or past on F-150, right? So you've got Pro, XLT, Lariat, Platinum, right? And then we've got Flash in the middle as a mid-tier. I can only assume two things. One, they felt like it was going to make a little bit more of a, made it a little bit more exciting as a news item, like to not for us, but for people who are shopping. So it raises attention a little bit if this is the new one, and maybe there's a tiny amount of fatigue because F-150 Lightning has been out for a few years now and it's not the shiny object these days in terms of the EV sure. world, even though it is very cool and you can buy one. I don't know. Maybe they just didn't have another. They didn't have another trim name that fit very well, and they wanted to bring a little, you know, play on words with the electrification there or something. I do think it's cool. I think that the trim itself is great. I think that it's a very practical. You're getting a lot of stuff that you would want to have in the in a Lightning if you wanted one at all. You know, $70,000 is not something that most people are going to spend on a new vehicle, but it is certainly affordable in the very small world of EV pickup trucks right now that Lightning is definitely the winner there. This isn't the cheapest there, but until we get more Silverado, low spec Silverado EVs and work trucks and stuff out actually available to buy for consumers, that's going to be the price leader. And then things like you know, I know we called out in the article too, like the standard heat pump, which isn't super sexy, but you know, it's going to make the vehicle more efficient overall, especially in a variety of climates. That's great. That's something that real Lightning owners have been asking for a while. And, you know, Ford made the point in its materials presentation and kind of press release that, this was a package of, you know, a trim level that brings together things that people really wanted in one trip, essentially, that owners wanted in one trip. So I think it's a really practical move by Ford.
And then I think something that was really cool is that it was kind of buried in the news is that Ford laid out the entire F-150 Lightning lineup for early 2024. Mm-hmm. So you'll have the Lightning Pro, and all of these prices are after federal tax incentives. So you'll have the Lightning Pro for $49,995, Lightning XLT for $57,495, Lightning Flash for $69,995, Lightning Lariat for $77,495, Lightning Platinum for $89,995, and then Lightning Platinum Black with an extended range battery for $97,999.
I think all of those prices, except for the Pro, are with extended range batteries, are they not?
No, sorry,
I'm looking at it now.
From Flash to Lightning, Flash to Platinum Black mm-hmm. are with yeah. extended range. Pro right. and XLT are with the standard range.
Yep, got it. Okay. Yeah, man, I think it's cool. Like having the extra range, it's great for having the extra range. It's also good as if you're going to use it to occasionally like tow or haul anything to have a little bit more in reserve because your consumption is definitely going to go up when that happens. Mm-hmm. I think this will be a meaningful thing for people that are actually shopping for the Lightning right now. And I've long been a fan of this vehicle overall because I do think it makes a great transition vehicle. A little bit like we were talking about with Honda. When they will eventually sell you a Prologue. I think this is a fantastic first EV for a lot of people, especially people who have driven trucks. I think that you can get in it, drive it, use it like a truck. It's not going to feel too weird. I mean, it does look kind of cool and it has a huge frunk and like some more screens inside. But for the most part, you're going to forget that it's in an EV. You're in an EV after a while and you're just, mm-hmm. you just drive it like an F-150. And I think that's the entire goal. And it sort of helps
oh, for sure.
smooth this runway to having all EVs and no standard, no ICE cars. So,
oh, yeah. I think Ford's move on the Lightning here was just 1000%. Hey, let's make it feel and look and operate like the regular F-150 that everybody knows and loves.
Yep.
And then we're going to produce another truck that's in development right now that we don't have any information on yet. Another full size truck that Jim Farley said will be different than this one. It's going to go further in the EV direction. That won't necessarily have that same kind of familiar feel. This is absolutely the transition. In a lot of ways, I think that the C8 Corvette Stingray was sort of the transition to something more like the Z06 with the high revving engine that I get the impression that Z06 was the car that should have been the C8 Corvette, but it's like, no, let's do the Stingray. With the with the familiar LT1 V8, the push rod, you get the noise, you get the feel. Sort of the same thing there, albeit in a completely different genre of vehicle.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's. I've never really thought about that before, but maybe.
I think that was 3 or 4 years ago when the Corvette came out. If I remember correct, I think we even did an article on it.
Know, maybe the Z06 was kind of what the C8 should have been all along. But
yeah. I don't know how I made that jump from Lightning to Z06, but
it's okay.
It's Wednesday and Seth put some just some philosophical thoughts in my head here.
So. Yeah, you're in a flow state right now, and one thing is leading to another.
Stream of consciousness.
I like it. I didn't follow you on that one at all. I was 100% awesome. Left behind, but
nice.
I appreciate your process. So
that's okay. That's normal.
But from cars that, you know, maybe they're vaguely affordable, like what we're kind of expecting the Prologue to be, to super, you know, you got to be the super, super rich guy to have your 911 GT3R Rennsport edition. Let's talk about something that is much more accessible. Let's talk about the new Forza Motorsport. And yes, it is new. It is Forza Ooh. Motorsport now. It is not Forza Motorsport 8, even though it is Forza Motorsport 8.
So Forza Motorsport, we've been hearing about it for a while. Here comes the gaming content, everybody. This is for Xbox. It's for PC. So you can, if you don't have an Xbox, you can get it through PC. It's up through Steam. We've known about it for many, many months now. It launches October 10th. Folks who buy the Forza Motorsport Premium Edition can start playing it October 5th, which is just a few hours away as we're recording this on Wednesday.
I know what my dad's doing tomorrow because he did buy that version.
Okay. Well, I think he'll sit down and I think he'll enjoy it. We managed to get an early review copy. So I've spent...
You got an early review copy. You got to mess with it for just over a week, right?
I've spent probably, I don't know, 6-7 hours maybe all total, just trying to get used to it, get the feel for it. I'm playing it through Xbox Series X. It's only available for the Xbox Series. It's not offered for Xbox One. So if you do have the console, got to be Series X or Series S. Yes. And I've played Forza 7. I've played Forza 6. I've done the Horizon series. I'm a transplant from the Gran Turismo series because I just got completely disillusioned after, really, after GT6. I was just devoted to the GT series. And then, okay, GT5 came. It didn't really move the bar. GT6 came. And a lot of promises went unfulfilled. The cars still sounded like vacuums. So I transported to Xbox and Motorsports. And here we are. And I'm a little, just a little disappointed.
Really?
The general take
you sounded... You sounded like you liked it. You didn't love it. The fact that you're saying you're disappointed now.
Well. Here's the thing. It's been a long time from Forza 7, from Motorsport 7 to now. It's been 6 years, almost to the day. Wow. I think it was October. Well, actually, to the day, maybe. I think it was October 3rd when Forza 7, Motorsport 7, launched 2017. So about 6 years to the day. That's a lot of time to really dial it in, get it fine-tuned. And in that time, we've also had a lot of Horizon games, which are decidedly more on the arcade side. I'm not a super hardcore racing sim guy with like the full motion cockpit and all that. I've had racing cockpits for, a lot of years. I like to sit down. I like to race with a wheel. I like having good force feedback.
You've had cockpits, so...
Right. No, I don't consider myself a hardcore sim racer, you know, like the Assetto Corsa Competizione guys, the R Factor, iRacing. But I do enjoy something a little more bitey than just a typical arcade game. I was hoping Forza Motorsport was going to be that. And to me, and flavors will vary, I'll fully admit that. To me, it feels just a little more on the arcade side. Okay. It feels a little too easy to jump in, just jump right into a big supercar, go turn some quick laps. Example I used in my article, I bought a Koenigsegg Jesko, which if you buy the premium edition, you'll start right off with enough credits to pretty much buy any supercar you want. I got the Jesko, took it to Le Mans. Did the old circuits after two practice laps. With all the assist turns off, I did a time of 3:31. Whoa. And I am not a sim racing pro by any means. And I feel like it should have been a little bit harder. It should have been a little bit more of a challenge in my mind to go and turn that kind of lap in a Jesko, which is insanely overpowered.
Just to confirm, that's assist turned off, but they've always generally had like what they call simulation in terms of like the steering and stuff like that.
That was with simulation steering.
Okay. All right. Just wanted to clarify that.
And,
very good.
And on Motorsports, the main difference that I really caught was simulation steering. It felt just about the same under all circumstances until you knock the back end out a little bit, you dip a wheel off the track, and it just instantly snaps around. And I mean, that's pretty realistic. But if I'm doing 20 miles an hour in a slow speed corner and I drop a wheel and then it just instantly snaps around, it feels like it just snaps you. It snaps the reactions a little bit quicker.
Okay. And you said you were using a modified Logitech G20 steering wheel.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes. Okay. So I have it's an older Logitech G920. It's the entry level in force feedback wheels. Like I said, I'm not a hardcore pro. It mm-hmm. suits my needs. I did install a larger steering wheel. I had to get an adapter just so you get a regular full size feel. And then I'm using the clutch.
Really good middle point though, because a lot of people are going to play this with a controller. Some people are going to play it yes. with a steering wheel. And then, mm-hmm. you know, they're obviously, you can go farther and farther and farther into the simulation realm in terms of steering wheels. But I think that's a good comparison point just to let people know where you are in kind of the scheme.
Yes. And that's why I say your flavors will vary, because I feel like Turn 10 Studios, they're really trying to make this an enjoyable game for either somebody on a wheel like me or sitting down and using a controller. And I did spend probably about an hour playing it with a regular controller. It's easier in some respects, but it's harder in others, because you don't have, at least for me, the kind of the same sense of feedback, but you yep. do still get vibrations in the sticks. You get vibrations in the triggers for throttles. So you do get a fair amount of feedback. And that's one area that I think this is definitely an improvement over Forza 7, definitely over the Horizon series. It seems a little too easy to just jump in and be awesome, but the feedback actually feels really good.
Okay. Smith, what can I ask? So you bought the edition where you already get a bunch of credits. Like you said, you're already in
yep.
a supercar. From that standpoint, or I guess from the standpoint of somebody who isn't, who's buying like the base version, what drives the gameplay, right? No pun intended. Like, are you still trying to like essentially win enough races to collect credits to buy more cars? Like, what is the structure of the game?
Sure. So
just racing cars, right? Because if you're just sure. getting and racing anything you want, that's not fun to me, whether the gameplay is good or not.
And that's, I think that'll be an issue for some people, because I mean, Gran Turismo, you have to work to progress, right? You right. start small, you walk before you run. In Forza Motorsport, if you want to, you can pretty much run right off the bat. Now there is,
but only if you buy the premium version of the game, right?
No, not necessarily. Not exactly. Okay. There's the regular career mode, and you'll start there, and there's like the tutorial Builder's Cup where you can choose one of three cars to drive. There was the Subaru WRX STI 209, Mustang GT, and a Civic Type R, I think. So, I mean, you know, a nice place to start. But if you want, you can push through that in about 10 or 15 minutes. Presumably you'll win the races, because you could adjust the difficulty, is basically the AI difficulty as low or as high as you need. So if you get a little frustrated set on the middle setting, you could bump it down to low, and honestly on the lowest AI setting, you're gonna win. You're just gonna win. I mean the cars will slow down to 10 miles an hour on every corner. You're gonna win. And even with the regular edition, you're still winning a lot of credits. You still get, different race cars as rewards. It'll take a little bit longer. It's not going to take much longer. But Turn 10 and the Forza series, they will still heap you with rewards, with credits, with cars as you win and progress. And then once you go through that initial Builder's Cup, then you move into the career mode where there are various series. I don't have them all right in front of me, but like series for rear wheel drive cars, series for, all wheel drive, some special one make events, and it goes on and on and on. And if you aren't particularly interested in that, you can just jump right over to free play and just set up whatever race you want. You don't have to buy a car. You can rent a car, and that gives you right off the bat. I mean, I could have rented the Koenigsegg Jesko, and in this case, rent means you don't pay for it. You just don't accumulate any experience or anything that you can move forward on. You're just driving the car on the track. So yeah, right from the get-go, you can do that. Once you go through the Builder's Cup, you can jump right into free play, rent a car, and go try to turn a 331 on Le Mans in a hypercar.
So something we were talking about before the show, and something I think it's worth bringing up, because to my knowledge, and you know, I've been keeping an eye on this game because I do plan on buying it, not getting it tomorrow like my dad, but I do plan on buying it, is that so there are several new tracks.
Yes.
But we were talking about things, and the Nordschleife is not available at launch. They're promising that it's coming. Correct. You know, but it is not one of the tracks that are available at launch. Can you talk about some of the new tracks that are available and what you were able to experience there? Because, you know, obviously sure. The cars are part of it, but where you get to drive them is another very important part of things. So, yeah.
Absolutely. And that also plays into a little bit of a larger picture that I think Turn 10 Studios is painting here. They established this. I mean, obviously there's 500 cars at launch, 20 tracks at launch. That's a sizable racing game right off the bat, but its build has a foundation where there will be regular updates in the months and years to come. And I think Forza Motorsport 7, I think they updated that over the course of at least 2 years, if not three or four. I can't remember exactly how long it was. So there's a sense that this is going to get much, much bigger than it is now. When you look at Forza Horizon 5, there are already, I think, 715 cars in Horizon 5. And I can't imagine it's extraordinarily difficult to just, you know, kind of pluck and plug in here and go. But in terms of tracks, yes. We've got Eagle Rock Speedway, Grand Oak Raceway, Kailami Grand Prix Circuit, Hakone. My pronunciation is terrible.
Hakone.
Thank you, Bruce.
Hakone Highway. Yeah.
Hakone Circuit. I'm not familiar with that one in real life, but I am familiar with Mid Ohio Sports Car, and that is in the game. And I think a lot of our listeners, including one co-host, is really excited about that one.
Yeah, there's this guy out there named Rusty Bruce who is the happiest man in the world that Mid-Ohio is now part of this game.
And I mean, the courses, I mean, look, the game looks great. It looks fantastic. There's ray tracing in there with up to 60 frames per second. The cars look fantastic. Turn 10 Studios, they say they've actually gone through, they haven't just like pulled old tracks, kind of dusted them off and plugged them in. They said they've remapped all the tracks, like at just the base level. I will say I'm pretty familiar with Le Mans. I'm really familiar with Suzuka. They're both in the game. Mm-hmm. They do feel different and better, I think, in Forza Motorsports. There are sharper corners and areas that I didn't remember there being corners at before. Laguna Seca is in the game, and it's particularly more challenging. I remember being able to just kind of zip through corkscrew and just be done. You're not zipping through corkscrew in this. I will say that aspect is a little more challenging. And like I said, the physics, they've redone the physics on all the cars. Especially I noticed on front wheel drive, all wheel drive cars, there's a much better sense of understeer. You can really feel it and hear it when you're diving into understeer. The same corrections that you do in real life with the wheel that I had, at least I can make those corrections in the game. It got me back into shape. So that's where there's sort of the double-edged, you know, the kind of the mixed emotions here, which is what I said in the headline. It felt like it was just too easy to jump in and do pretty good. But the act of driving still felt really rewarding. I just wish it was a little bit tougher to move along. And I mean, you could always, I guess, bump up the difficulty on the AI, but I mean, that's
kind of what I was going to ask. So obviously you had a review copy, and so I don't know the answer to this question beforehand. Were you able to do any multiplayer at all with the version that you had? Because I'd be curious, maybe it's easy, and maybe, you know, I don't know this because you've played the game and I haven't. Maybe the AI is a little dumber than it used to be, but, you know, humans are humans. So were you able to do any multiplayer races against humans? Did you get any experience with that?
Not on that. There were some multiplayer sessions available that you had to sign up for.
Okay.
My schedule just didn't have me able to
meet
some of those. And my past experience with Forza Online, and I think a lot of people that play Forza Online can sympathize with this, is it's like a case study in how to either punt somebody else off the track or get punted off the track.
They got pretty good with that with the last Horizon game, where they wouldn't, basically your car would become invisible if they thought someone was about to punt you off. Like, it wasn't right. Perfect, but they were getting there.
And so. and I mean, with the early online sessions, I mean we're dealing with reviewers. In theory, we're dealing with people that are going to be a lot more controlled, a lot more composed,
more conscientious.
What I'm curious on, they've really gone after, they've really tried to make the online multiplayer experience better, in that they've enacted some might argue a really strict set of penalties. Basically every collision, every off-track excursion is analyzed case by case. If you're deemed at fault, you get docked time. If you are basically just a habitual offender, there could be, and they didn't go into specific details, but there could be online events that you're just not even allowed to participate in. You have to be at a certain level with certain criteria before you can participate on that.
Doesn't that solve your competition problem? I'm still really confused. I got to be honest. I've got two big questions here. One is, I don't fully understand how the problem can be that it's too easy to just get in and drive if you can turn up the AI, or if the online competition is too challenging. And then two, I think I want to hear just a little bit about, like, what's new in the game? Like, is there new customization? Are there new like modes or features? Is there
And that's another thing. There's the big thing here is they've upped the graphics. They've retweaked the physics. But as far as like the upgrades, the process, that's still pretty much the same.
It just looks and feels like seven.
It looks a little different. They do add an extra tuning aspect called suspension geometry that basically will let you adjust like dive and squat, body roll, things of that nature. The rest of the upgrade process is pretty much the same as it was. One thing that is a little different here, you don't just buy upgrades with credits and toss them onto your car all at once. So what that means is, before you can basically access some of these upgrades, you have to drive that car in races or in free play, turning laps, getting various experience points, things with that car. When you get to a certain level, okay, now you can unlock your upgraded fuel injection or your upgraded exhaust. Mm-hmm. The more you drive, the more you can unlock. And then instead of going with credits, you go in with all of these points, you unlock those upgrades. So you might be level 100 driver with a V12 swapped Civic, because you can still do these crazy engine swaps and all that in mm-hmm. Forza Motorsport. But if you get a Honda S2000 and it's your first time driving it, that car is at level one. You can't really do anything to it until you go out and you drive it some. And in that respect, they do make you work a little bit more for it. You're not just going to buy a car, dump everything onto it right away, go out, drive it for half a day, and then be like, oh, I'm kind of bored with that. So there is that aspect. To kind of clarify a little bit more on harder and easier, I guess what I'm talking about in terms of it feeling too easy, not necessarily in racing with other cars, mm-hmm. with other people on the track, but just driving the car close to the limit or approaching the limit. It feels a little too easy to just jump into a high powered car and just go fast and hit every apex and not slide into the wall all the time. That's really what I mean there.
Yeah.
I should have clarified that a little bit more.
No,
the racing challenge. I mean, that's always going to be a challenge. Mm-hmm. You can crank up the AI to where it's, everybody is just blisteringly fast. There will be the challenge there. And I've experienced that to some degree with the races. I've already had it cranked up pretty far. It's like, okay, this might be a little too tough. Especially, and here's this kind of goes back to their new penalty system. And it's a little frustrating when you only have four laps in a race and you're starting in the middle of the pack. It's very, very difficult to not bump into other cars as you try. I mean, you only have four laps. You got to try to get to the front. I'm not saying you go up and you just rear end somebody out of the way. But like, I mean, there are several cases where I would brush up into the door on a car, or maybe I would have the inside line and one of the AI cars would dive down into me and I would get hit with a penalty because it was an avoidable collision. There might still be, I suspect there'll be some tweaking on turn 10's part to kind of dial in some of the penalty rules there a little bit. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, as far as the actual competing against other people aspect, whether it's AI, whether it's multiplayer, that part can certainly be challenging. What I'm talking about is if I'm in free play and I just want to go out with a new car and turn some laps and see how it feels, I want to get to know the car and I want to feel like I've kind of mastered it after a little while. I don't want to just master it in a couple laps. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a case of they want to be a little on the side of caution because a lot of people will be playing this with a controller. It will be a little bit harder with a controller, not having quite the same level of feedback. And of course there are various assists that you can turn on. I mean, you can turn on steering assist and throttle assist and brake assist to where it'll slow you down. It'll speed you up. It'll turn you through corners. I mean, you can set all of that up. But I'm probably being a little negative. I think it's a good game overall. After playing Forza Motorsport 7 for so many years, I don't know that I would go for the premium version on this just because it's an improvement, but it doesn't feel like 6 years improvement is the conclusion that I came to. And this is also just the very beginning. So
right.
I'm actually looking forward to seeing what they do moving forward in the future on it.
And I mean, if you look at the most recent Forza Horizon, they've been doing essentially monthly updates on that. And so I guess we don't know for certain, but it would follow that, you know, this would kind of have a similar update cadence where, you know, as they see fit, they're probably going to tweak stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, the press announcement specifically said the Nordschleife is coming in the spring of 2024. So I imagine they were expecting right off the bat for people to say,
"Where's the
why isn't this? Why can't I
go around the Nürburgring
in there?" I mean,
I will just wait to spring to buy it. Honestly, if I was going to buy it at all,
yeah,
and I knew that I wouldn't buy it until that came out. Sounds like I wouldn't want to buy it now. If you just told me it's 20 tracks in 2023 and a bunch of other stuff is coming through DLC, I think there's lots of other stuff to occupy my time, unless it was just super compelling in some other way, which doesn't seem to be the case with in this analysis. So
yeah, I mean, I would say the compelling parts are it looks great. There is a good variety of cars. I would like to see more tracks, but yeah, it's not in my mind. It's not worth 6 years of waiting. But hey,
it's a bummer.
In individual flavors will vary.
Yeah. Well, I think, Smith, you did a fantastic review. I would recommend anyone who's listening, if you're curious, go read Smith's review of the new Forza Motorsport on MotorOne.com, because he's obviously able to go into even more detail there about some stuff we didn't get to discuss. But guys, we have just enough time. I think here's what we'll do. We had a cheap Porsche challenge, and we got to spend $10,000 on a Porsche. And as always, the usual cheap car challenge rules apply. They have to be relatively near where you live, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And I think we have just enough time for each of us to do one car. Does that sound fair to everyone?
I think that's fair. And when you're talking about $1 million Porsche to start, having a cheap Porsche challenge was sort of a no-brainer in this one.
It was,
And I guess the big question is, can you buy a decent Porsche right off the bat for $10,000.
You absolutely can, because we are, when we were originally discussing this, we said it would be $8,000. And I think I could have done this for $8,000, but I spent my extra money well, and I found a really cool Porsche.
Seth, you're the guest. Why don't you go first?
No way. You guys go first because
I'm, oh my God.
No, absolutely not.
Now okay. Do you want me to go first then here? I'll jump in.
I'm good. I got one here. Here.
Let's go. I'm a little nervous that the three of us might have found the same car.
No.
Me too. I'm going to be interested to see if that happens. You went with a 944.
87 Porsche 944S. It is $9,000. So I spent my extra money wisely, and it is in Chagrin Falls, Ohio. According to the seller, it belonged to his father, who is apparently still alive, but who isn't like internet savvy, which that's understandable. It's got 114,000 miles on it. However, the odometer died, so he thinks it's actually more like 160. And it is a 944S. That means it's got the 16-valve engine, and you'll see that in the under hood shots. I have driven a regular 944 from 1987, which also had the 16-valve engine. These are fantastic cars. This one looks pretty good. I love the fact that the listing gives you the full service records. Like, this guy just goes through everything. Cylinder head rebuilt in 2017.
Wait. This is on Facebook Marketplace? You never get this on Facebook Marketplace. Wow. Hello,
my friend. You know, it does have some issues. It's got some surface rust on the body. And it's got, you'll see here, it's got a replacement steering wheel, and it's got a replacement head unit. None of that bothers me. You could find another steering wheel for not a whole lot of money. But still, like, I love, so this is the post-refresh 944 instrument cluster, and in my mind, it is absolutely perfect. It tells you everything that you need to know. You've got oil temp, you've got fluid temp, you've got a big speedometer, you got a big tachometer, you just got everything. There's the aftermarket head unit I mentioned. It's got a cracked a gear shift, which from what I have seen every 944 has, but gorgeous carpets, very nice underhood. It does have some paint blemishes, like that's not great, and you'll see here in a second it's got some rust bubbling up on the side sills.
That's not some rust bubbling, that's
no sir,
that's like how much of the rocker is left.
I don't know.
Half?
I think it's more than half, but
I bet there are holes underneath there. You get up underneath there and look, and I bet there's holes.
It's a cool car.
No.
I think it's great. I think it's an awesome pick. I think it speaks to the marketplace right now that this is 9,000, or at least they're asking $9,000, because 10 years ago, this in this condition seems like it would have been like a $3,000 car, right? So,
oh yeah, it's maybe five, definitely come up. Yeah.
Also comes with an extra set of wheels with winter tires on it. He admits, there's the some rust, minor body paintwork issues. The AC is not working, you know, so there are issues, but this fits the bill. This is a very nice 944 for sub $10,000. And I would not be upset, embarrassed at the least to get a car like this.
No, that's fair. I know we talked initially about maybe excluding 944s and 924s just to make it a little bit more of a challenge. But hey, the 94, I've always been a fan of the 944. I've been a fan of the 924.
I will be a complete masochist right now, and I'll show you the car that I didn't want to show you. And that is a $7,500 Porsche 928.
Yeah.
He's allegedly selling it from a friend who doesn't use the internet. It runs and drives great. There are two pictures of it. This would have been my other choice, but we had to pick one for the show tonight. So I went with the $9,000 944.
I have that up as one of my picks too, just like defensively if somebody else picked one of the other cars that I have up. So okay. Yeah, that one's a real, you're going to want to have a real close look at that, because 928, again, 928 prices have gone through the roof. Finding a 928 under, even like 20 grand these days. That's reasonable. I think it's hard to do. And that's kind of, I can't tell. Is that a, do you think that's maroon or do you think that's brown? Because I know that they had sort of a wine.
I think it's maroon.
I think it's maroon.
Here we go.
I mean, let's take another look because let's make it 3 for 3. It was my pick too. What did I tell you guys? Come on. I was trying like hell to find a 911. But when I found the 928, and this is down, just down north of Detroit, right? So,
yeah.
I think it's maroon. I can't really tell.
I think that was originally maroon. Because go to the front deck. I mean, it
doesn't look bad in the photos. Maybe the background is a little, the background is a little unnerving. Like what is that? A second gen Camaro sitting up on something. I don't even know what it's sitting up on. There's a stack of tires over there to the right. The only thing missing from this, honestly, is a Corvair.
There's probably a Corvair in there somewhere.
There's probably a Corvair. But I tell you what, since we all three actually landed on this car, let me jump over to one of my other picks. This is actually one that I dumped right into our chat right off the bat. And I realized, well, I kind of like it. Now, it's in New Jersey, which I have driven in New Jersey in one day. I have done that drive before. from Mount Pleasant all the way, where was I at? I was somewhere in central New Jersey. It all kind of blended together. So it technically meets the rules. 2001 Porsche Boxster. It's got the Tiptronic. It's red. It's $79.95.
So DQ, immediate DQ.
What?
The Tiptronic was a horrible, horrible transmission, especially on a Boxster.
It's a red Boxster for $79.95.
I know.
Look, man, at it.
You're getting a deal.
I gotta go with Smith on this one. There are only so many cars out there.
I mean, that's a good looking fun Porsche for under $8,000.
All right, run. I dropped the link in the background chat. So I'll show you what you're gonna want to do if you're gonna buy a Boxster for under 10 grand or with your 10 grand limit.
I guess this must be Batavia, Illinois. I know.
I think I saw that car too.
Chicagoland. I think this is lapis blue. It's the 2.7 liter, not the 2.9 liter, and 5-speed transmission.
That interior is gorgeous.
Really nice. I love that color combo of the blue paint over saddle leather. It's got high miles. It's 130,000 miles. You can definitely get like a nicer low mileage Boxster if you're looking a little bit longer for under 10 grand and lower mileage. But turbo twist wheels. It's got all the like classic Boxster stuff that you would want to have.
It's got a salvage title.
So what?
Okay. It looks great. It just catches on fire because it's been flooded and all the electrics are shot, right?
Well, apparently it's parked in a shack, a murder shed somewhere.
Listen, I mean, hey, salvage title.
Salvage title versus Swiss cheese rockers. I mean, kind of flip a coin on that one, I guess. But
okay, fair.
Not that it's competition. No, you're right. You're right. This should probably be more money. I would argue that maybe if this were a non-salvage title version of the same car with that mileage, they might be asking like $11,000. I have another one, some others that are slightly close to it, or with lower mileage that are a tiny bit over the cap too. So that is fair. I probably wouldn't buy this car without like a real close look from a mechanic that I trusted a lot, but my father's unfortunate.
Group FBC, real I clapping here. My father's unfortunate encounter with a rock. I need clarification. Did the rock hit the car or the father?
Who can say? And it's another car that's being sold by somebody that like allegedly is old, infirm, doesn't have the internet, et cetera, et cetera. Also, if I'm being totally brutal, the pictures are a little pixelated and cut off. Is this just a total scam listing? Remains to be seen. But if this car was straight in my neighborhood and was available for $8,000, I would be very tempted to pull the trigger on it.
Well, so. Sure. Did you not own a Boxster previously?
Yeah. Yeah. I had a 486 box, or sorry, a 986 Boxster. Why am I forgetting the year? Was it an year one, maybe it was 2001, 2000 or 2001. Awesome. I loved it, but it was the 2.9. It had the 6-speed transmission and otherwise didn't have a whole lot of, had the upgraded stereo on it, but, nothing else that was fancy. Truly lovely. Great to drive really hard. And I know that if you're into doing stuff like track days or autocrossing too, they're really fun cars that hold up pretty well under that stuff too. You do have to look after them, obviously. But, you know, that's a lot of old fun cars. So, I think they're great. I think they're cool. And I've always been jealous. My Porsche mechanic had a Boxster, Gen 1 Boxster in this color combination too, which I always thought was really great. I think it looks very classic. So
very good.
No, proving that once again, you can find fun, inexpensive cars, rambling about cars. That's what we do, right?
That's right. That's what we try to do. But with that, I think that's going to be our show for tonight. And as always, I thank all of our listeners out there who decided to spend their time with us tonight, or who decide to listen to us on Friday once the audio version goes up, or sometime next week when they have time to listen to the audio version. I understand that everyone is busy in this world. We all have things to do. And the fact that you decide to spend time with us, it means a lot to Smith and I, and I'm sure it does Seth as well, because you do podcasts on this network, and it just feels fantastic every time someone listens and someone comments and whatnot. So
speaking of which, Seth, thanks for joining us here tonight.
Absolutely.
What do you have going on that you want to tell all the ramblers out there?
What do I have going on?
Aside from motor1.com, Inside EVs, Ride Apart, go to these freaking websites every day so we can continue to do stuff like this.
Right.
And
yeah, I mean, I don't have anything big special coming on you guys. I've got, like, my time has been very occupied in the last couple of weeks. We just brought on, very excited, we can announce this here. We just brought on a new editor-in-chief to Inside EVs, a guy by the name of Patrick George that you might be aware of. He was the ran Jalopnik for many years. So Patrick and I have been working a lot on sort of the future of Inside EVs. Super excited to have him. I have a couple little things that I need to finish up. Like I said, I'm going to go ride that Honda Moto Compacto in next week, and I'll be writing that up. And then I have, to stay on our Porsche theme, I have 75% completed a review of the Porsche 911 T, which I really, really adored in a fantastic color that I'm blanking on now, the super bright green. So you can find all of those things on Motor One in the next couple of weeks if you check back in. So
very good.
Yeah.
Are you all done, Smith? Do you have anything else you need to talk about?
No.
Okay. Well, then we will be seeing you folks. No, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that.
I might try to work on my show project car here in the next couple of weeks. But I just met a guy at a car event on Monday that I managed to go to, who had a John Deere 170 lawn tractor, and it got me inspired to try to repair the John Deere 180 that's sitting out in the shop.
Heck yeah.
I don't have nothing to do.
Nothing rides like a deer. Runs like a deer.
Runs like a deer. Damn it. Yep. Anyway. So good afternoon, good evening, good morning, or good night. Whenever you listen to us, we appreciate it. And thank you so much for being with us this evening. And with that, we're going to say goodbye. So bye-bye, everybody.
Bye, we'll see you.